everyone. This is Kimberly Harrison at Singing for Your Soul. Welcome to the Singing for Your Soul radio show. I truly hope that we will be exploring information together that really makes your voices and your souls sing. And here's what I really mean by that. So Singing for Your Soul is my voice coaching business. It's where we work on using our voices well for singing, for speaking, for healthy self-expression, and all of the things that go with that. However, Singing for Your Soul is also one of my very personal guiding lights. It really involves the daily process of asking myself what makes my soul sing, and then really doing my best to move towards that, finding ways to live that really make me feel amazing and connected and basically like my soul is expressing itself, is singing. So it's a phrase that I often use with myself and also in my work with my clients so that we're looking at what we want to be moving towards, both in singing and in speaking, but also in our lives. We're looking at what brings us more joy and how can we create a more harmonious relationship with our voices, with our bodies, with the sonic world around us. And that's really what Singing for Your Soul is all about. So just to set the scene today, I'm all cozy. I've got my tea. I've got a diffuser with an autumn blend of essential oils in it. It smells amazing. Fall is one of my favorite seasons, and here in Michigan, it is just gorgeous. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And so I'm all cozy, and these things really help me focus and just feel ready to dive into goodness. So that's where I am. And as we dive in today, I want to let you know what we're going to talk about. I want to briefly touch on some of the topics that we've covered in the past two shows so that we can remind ourselves of some of the material that we've been exploring. A lot of it might be new to many people, and so I want to look at some of the most relevant information that we've already covered. And we'll just do that briefly, and then we're going to dive into what vocal technique actually is and how to troubleshoot some of the most common vocal problems that people have with their speaking voices. And this goes for pretty much anyone, including singers. If a singer is speaking in an unhealthy way, they're going to be sabotaging their ability to sing well and to have vocal longevity. So we all need to make sure that we're using our voices healthily. So we're going to cover those top four ways that people often are misusing their voices and what we can do to remedy that. So, in show number one, I shared about discovering in my process with my voice and in all the teaching that I've done, how much of an inner journey singing actually is, and that finding our voices is both a literal and a figurative process. It's how we sound. So do we sound charismatic and alive and colorful and inviting, or do we maybe sound gravelly and scratchy and maybe kind of bored, or do we mumble? Is it hard to understand us? Is there sort of a monotone in the voice? Are we bombastic and crazy or shrill? You know, sometimes people have those really shrill voices that just grate on your nerves. So is there some way that we might be using our voices that's off-putting to other people? That's one of the things that we look at. It's also about how we say what we say, the words that we choose, the tone of voice that we're using, the intention behind our words, and how we're delivering them. That's a really important aspect to consider when we do vocal work. It's also something that I really want to drive the point home is that it's our voice with a capital V. It's how we are expressing ourselves and interacting with other people in our lives. That's what voice with a capital V means. It means it's how you sound and it's how you're coming across, how you're interacting, how you're living. So One thing that would also be important to consider within that is how well we're able to listen to others. So it's not just about how we're sounding or how we're coming across, but a big piece of that is how well we're able to really be present with other people and really truly hear them. And also to be more conscious of the world around us, of what's going on around us. So we're looking at our ability to engage, to truly hear, and to see past appearances and into the deeper soul of things. Now, along with all of that, in show number 2, I talked about the importance of approaching sound with reverence. I just love the word reverence. I just think it's a beautiful word, and it's a beautiful way to think about how we are interacting with sound. So I'm going to elaborate on what I mean by that. So in episode number 2, we explored sound as this universal and omnipresent force. And we looked at some of the ways that sound actually has an organizing principle or a disorganizing principle. It depends on how you're looking at it. So sound can either have a constructive or a destructive effect on us. So we looked at ways that we could really work with our sonic environments to have them be more constructive and more affirming for us. So I'm going to give you some examples of ways that we can be looking at creatively constructing our sonic environments and why we would want to do that. So the number one way is something that you carry with you all of the time, which is why it's the number one way, and it is how we sound. It's learning how to make more pleasing, more healthy sounds throughout the day, and that's going to help us be more affirming with ourselves and with everyone that we speak with. So it's the difference between having a grating effect on someone or having an inspiring effect on someone. Often the sounds of our voices play a huge role in that. An example I can give that I've noticed recently, I've been listening to the podcast, The Model Health Show. It's The Model Health Show, and it's fabulous. It's with Sean Stevenson and Jade Harrow, and I love it. It's so amazing. And they always read the iTunes review of the week at the beginning of the podcast, and I can't tell you how many times they've read an iTunes review where somebody has mentioned the sound of one or both of their voices, that they love the soothing sound of Sean's voice, or they love the sound of Jade's voice and how funny she is and how much life her voice brings. So it's really important. And often we don't really consider that. So there are some other things that we can do to really clean up our external environments. So some examples of that would be turning off the television and not just having it on in the background. Pay attention next time if you are somebody who does that. Pay attention and see if you can notice that your body is actually having to filter out more information, and it's mildly stressful. For me, it's not even mildly stressful. It's actually super stressful to have the television on in the background. I pretty much have to be focusing on it or not at all, and I usually have to turn off the commercials because they make me crazy. And I'm pretty sensitive to that stuff. Not everybody has to be like that. But just pay attention and see if you can develop some more awareness and see if you can possibly invite in the possibility of silence or of putting on maybe some soothing music instead. Now, a fountain is one of my favorite things, to have a fountain in your office or your living room. Or I don't really like it in my bedroom at night because then it makes me have to pee, and I don't like that in the middle of the night. But I do love having a fountain. Or maybe finding a recording of nature, some sounds of nature, falling rain, or the ocean, or a bird song, something like that, that you can play maybe while you're at work or something of that nature. Baroque music is a wonderful thing. It really helps us get into alpha state where you're able to focus better. So that would be something to consider during your workday, maybe to get you in the state of working. Spend about 3 to 5 minutes just listening to some Baroque music and doing a little meditation. And then if you're someone who can concentrate with music on, then you can keep it playing at a very, very low level. Often I'll have to just turn it off because I will just pay too much attention to the music to focus on other stuff. But you have to find what works for you. So another big example that I'd love to give is turning off the notifications on our phones and devices. So I've actually gone ahead and done that, and my phone only dings at me if it's ringing, somebody's calling, or if I'm getting a text message. And I've got some pretty, just some nice dingy sounds that, and the harp goes off when the phone rings, so that I'm not being jarred constantly every day. That's really hard on my system when you constantly have those little dings coming at you. So I have eliminated as much as possible of that so that I'm not getting a message every time Facebook or Pinterest, somebody posts on some of those social media networks. So that kind of interruption is not only jarring to our bodies, but in this case what it does is it sets up a Pavlov's dog kind of scenario in which our bodies are secreting chemicals and hormones that are associated with the rewards and with feeling good. And that's really addictive. So what happens is every time that ding goes off on your phone, it first of all, it's a little bit startling, especially if it's been quiet and you're doing something else. But it also hits on the feeling that we all have of wanting to belong. It makes us feel like we belong. And for that reason, if we don't end up with that constant stimuli, like say you were trying to take a few days off of social media and maybe meditate in the woods or something, or, you know, just give yourself a mental health break for a period of time, what happens is we literally have those addictive cravings and withdrawal symptoms if we don't then satisfy that craving. And I experienced that, and I don't even have my little phone dinging all the time. So, you know, there are a lot of studies I'm sure you're aware of that it's really getting problematic for people to the point of even having these internet withdrawal centers in countries like China. I saw a special, and I think it was in China, where they take young people whose internet addictions are so serious that they're really debilitating. These kids are spending most of their waking lives on the computer. And what they're trying to do is helping them, you know, take them off of computers and break that addiction and help reintegrate them into being able to live a normal, productive life where they're actually able to interact with people and things like that. So that's a really extreme example, but heck, it's real. And I think it's important that we're aware of the situation so that we can take proactive steps to avoid this scenario altogether in our own lives, or to at least be minimizing those daily distractions and those jolts of serotonin and dopamine and those kinds of things. So those would be some of the examples that I would give about helping to eliminate some of the unnecessary sounds in your environment. And, you know, just one more thing. I will often carry earplugs with me if I am going to the movies or I'm going to a loud concert where I know that there's going to be serious pumpage of the subwoofers, you know, or if you're going to a bar or something like that, I'll actually carry earplugs with me. And if I don't, I'll even run into the bathroom if I don't have anything and grab some toilet paper and just put that in my ears to try to help, first of all, keep my hearing. I would like to have it for as long as possible. And also just to minimize that the effects that it's having on me that can be really uncomfortable for me. So, and often if I have been in an environment like that, and it can be fun, I'm not saying that's not fun, but what I will do is when I leave, maybe when I get in my car or as soon as I get home, I might play something that's soothing to help my body kind of find homeostasis after that experience. So I might play Baroque music or New Age music or some chanting or harp music, or I do play the harp, so I might even play the harp to myself or chant in tone to myself to, again, help my body reach that point of homeostasis. So it's really developing our awareness and becoming creative in how we are intentionally creating our environment. And that can even go into things like, you know, I'm using these essential oils today because they just really have a wonderfully positive effect on my mood. So I will have a diffuser going often. I will have my tea. You know, it's really how can we delight as many of our senses as possible, as often as possible? I'm all about that. So I'm not saying that we always want everything to be soothing and perfect. There's definitely a place for developing our hearty natures, developing that grit. Variety also is the spice of life. You know, I'm a fan of that. But I really am saying that the cells of our body are responding to the sounds that we hear. So helping them to be regularly soothed and balanced, because we do have so much stimulation in our society, by having that regular soothing and balancing effect on our bodies rather than having them constantly being overstimulated, we're literally going to be impacting our health for the better, okay? So this is what I mean by approaching sound with reverence. It's developing the understanding that sound very literally is the physical makeup of all matter. All matter is vibrating, and sound is really omnipresent on planet Earth. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. You can't escape the sound. And it's literally who and what we are. And it has the power to create or to destroy. And if you don't believe that, just blast something really loud next to your ears and feel your eardrum get blown out. And know that sound has power. It can literally blow out an eardrum. It can, you know, it can destroy stuff. As current science believes, or is playing with the idea, that the Big Bang actually literally brought things into existence. So we're literally looking at the power of sound to create or to destroy. So sound is a huge force. And just like other huge forces, like the ocean or outer space or nature itself, our relationship with these powerful forces is really deepened and kept in balance when we approach them with awe and with respect, and we learn how to use them and interact with them well. So we want to do the same thing with sound. So one of the top ways that we can do this, that we can develop this kind of relationship with sound, is by developing healthy voices. So let's dive into some of that vocal technique that I was mentioning we're going to talk about today. I'm going to take a sip of my tea first. Okay, so the first thing that I really want to shout from the rooftops, like, wah, like just cowabunga dude, like, wah! Really, this is my message to the world, is that I really believe that everyone can learn to sing, at least to one degree or another. Am I saying everyone is going to belong in American Idol? No. But am I saying that if somebody really, really, really wanted it and wanted to realize the work it might take to develop the ability to do that, and they wanted to put their minds to it, I am not going to stand in your way. You go with your bad self. I want to say that. I was reading Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. I am finally reading that book. It's been on my list for a while. And in it, he talks about getting a new dictionary. And the first thing that he did when he got it was turn to the page where impossible, the definition for impossible, was listed. And he very neatly cut it out of his dictionary because that word is not in his vocabulary. So I agree, both for life in general and for singing. And I have had clients just floor me with what they've done with their voices. So I really try very hard never to put parameters on a person and never to cage them in with expectations, because we can accomplish amazing things. It has to do with how much we want to focus and put our minds to it. I had a client who came in, and she was beautiful, and she looks a lot like Cher. And she said, I want to be a Cher impersonator. I have a lot of people tell me that I should do that. And I said, awesome, I see it. I can totally see that that would be a really cool thing for you to do. So then we started working on singing. She said, obviously, I need to develop my voice because I've never really studied singing. And so we started working, and her voice was very underdeveloped. It was weak, and it didn't have a lot of power or range. And I said, okay. Internally, I thought, wow, I don't know if this is possible. I don't know if this is going to happen. But I said to her, okay, look, we're going to strengthen your voice. Let's get to work. Let's really do some voice strengthening exercises. And we did. And then I gave her as many songs to work on as possible that were really building that power in her voice. Well, a few months into our work together, she really worked. She really did her homework. And she came in and she said, you know, we haven't sung any of Cher's songs. Can we try? I've been working on a few of them. And I was like, okay, I'm not sure she's ready, but okay. So I said yes. And I literally, honestly, fell off my piano bench when she started singing. It was so surprising and so good. And she really was getting the quality. Was she completely there yet? No, but she was on the path and hot to trot on that path. So we really can accomplish amazing things. And along with saying that it's possible for us all to develop our voices to whatever degree we decide, I also would really like to put forth a case for working on having more tolerance and acceptance within ourselves first that will hopefully translate out into society at large so that we're not being so judgy and picky about how people sound when they sing. And obviously there's been a lot of attention put on that in recent years it's really been brought about through American Idol and The Voice and X Factor and things like that, where they're really looking for people at a very high degree of talent and skill development. But it's kind of killing the joy of just good old-fashioned down-home singing. Down-home singing. I don't watch television very much, but there is one show that I will often watch while we're making dinner, and it's called The Waltons. Does anybody remember that show? I love The Waltons, and it's usually on right about the time that we are making dinner, and so we just will often watch it because you can kind of see from the kitchen into the living room. And last night on the show, everybody was singing. It was so cute, and they will often do that on this show. When they get together as a community, they sing, and they're not singing so that they can judge other people and be like, well, you just sang that harmony out of tune. Oh, my gosh. They're actually singing and enjoying it. It's a connecting thing. And there's such a sense of not having self-consciousness if they're doing it. They're expressing themselves. They're joining their voices in harmony. How beautiful. So really, can we really look at not killing the joy with perfectionism and just letting people freaking sing because it feels so good to do it. Not everybody's going to sound amazing, especially if they haven't had significant vocal training, but that doesn't mean that they can't enjoy singing. It's just like sports. You know, we don't take the attitude that you can't play sports unless you're a professional. That would be ridiculous, right? Because sports have so many other benefits besides just being better than everybody else. And it's the same with singing. So let's really soften that judgment and leave more room for the fun and the joy and the connection that singing can really bring us. Now, the second important thing before I get into the specific vocal techniques is that I don't give much credence to tone deafness. It's mostly a myth. And if you're really interested in learning more about what I mean by that and why, you can go ahead and visit my blog at singingforyoursoul.com/blog. Again, it's singingforyoursoul.com/blog. There's a lot of information there in that blog. And so if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you'll see a blog called What If I'm Tone Deaf? And you click on that and read through that. There's a lot of information, including a couple of videos that I have at the end that I've made about tone deafness and how to start learning about singing in tune. So if you're interested in that, you can check those out either for yourself or for any loved ones as well. And start spreading that message because it's one of the most common things that I've encountered as a voice coach is that people believe they're tone deaf and they'll just say, oh, I just can't sing. No, not true. I have taught many people how to match pitch and how to sing better, okay? So the final thing that people often don't realize about singing or speaking well is that both of these activities require well-developed muscles. It's working out. We've got to work out our voices. Singing and speaking are very complex processes. And just as with exercise, if we don't use it, baby, we lose it, right? The voice needs exercise just as much as the rest of our bodies. So when we do vocal work, we really get to think of ourselves as vocal athletes, okay? So now that we've determined that everybody can learn to sing, that tone deafness doesn't really exist, and that our voices really require exercise for developing the strength, the stamina, and the coordination, and the plain old ability to sound good, we're going to look at the top three things that we can do to sound better right away. Actually, not the top three, the top four things that we can do to sound better right away. But first, we're going to take a break and have some announcements. Courtney is ready.
Thank you, Kimberly. Kimberly teaches voice lessons worldwide online via Skype. She is also on faculty as the voice teacher at the Jackson Symphony Orchestra Music School in Jackson, Michigan, and teaches privately in Brooklyn, Michigan. She offers private voice lessons, voice classes, voice workshops for professionals, voice workshops for yoga teacher trainings, sound healing performances with voice, harp, Tibetan bowls, and frame drum. You can learn more and hear Kimberly sing at singingforyoursoul.com. If you're interested in private lessons online or in person, or in scheduling Kimberly for a workshop or sound healing performance, please email info@singingforyoursoul.com or call 310-439-9862. To stay in touch, receive exclusive content and a free copy of Kimberly's ebook, 6 Tips to Skyrocket Your Speaking, Singing, and Self-Confidence, you can join the mailing list at singingforyoursoul.com. You can also stay in touch on Facebook at facebook.com/singingforyoursoul. And finally, keep an eye out this Christmas season as Kimberly and her partner musician Marvin Riley will be performing a traditional Christmas program in various churches in the Jackson area. The concerts will feature voice, harp, hand percussion, drones, and Tibetan bowls, in haunting arrangements of beloved Christmas, old and new. If you wish to be added to the mailing list regarding their upcoming shows, send an email to info@singingforyoursoul.com or call 310-502-9367. And now back to your host, Kimberly Harrison.
Thank you, Courtney. Okay, so we are going to explore the top 4 things that we can do to sound better right away. And these are things that most of us can do to one degree or another to sound better with our speaking. And the speaking is very important. As I mentioned earlier, if you're a singer and the speaking voice isn't being produced in a healthy way, that is going to erode at your vocal longevity. It's really important that we're using our voices healthily so that we don't end up with some of the problems that come along with vocal misuse. So, the first number one thing that most of us in our society can really stand to work on is minimizing vocal fry. Now, what do I mean by that? Vocal fry is something that is very common in our speaking vernacular these days. And it's the sound that is kind of scratchy and raspy, and I'm kind of overdoing it right now. Some people don't do it this much, but sometimes people will fall back into it kind of at the end of their phrases. Can you hear what I'm doing right now? I had to use my phone instead of my good microphone today, so it might not sound quite as good as I wish it did, but hopefully you can hear some of that quality of sound that I'm doing right now. Okay? That is vocal fry. Now, in and of itself, it's not incredibly damaging. It's not like one of the worst things you could ever do to your voice, but it does rob your voice of some of its natural resonance and richness and health. because what you're doing is you're basically under-functioning with your voice when you do this. You're letting your voice, you're kind of speaking in a lazy way and letting the voice fall back deeper into the throat than it needs to be. Okay, so I'm going to explain this. It's going to take a little bit of work here, but it's not a super difficult concept to get here. So if you are listening and you have a pencil handy, grab a pencil or a pen right now. We're going to do a little exercise that helps you understand where the voice most healthily resonates in our bodies and helps you to start to develop some awareness of what that means. So if you have a pencil or a pen or at the very least a finger, I often have my students use their fingers, and I do have hand sanitizer available. And I make my own, so it's not toxic hand sanitizer. It's made with aloe vera and essential oils, just so you know, so it's ingestible and all of that stuff. But point is, something that you can put between your teeth, okay? So I'm going to put my pencil between my teeth in a second here, and I'm going to make some sounds, okay? And then I want you to repeat those sounds after me. It's really important that you kind of feel into this and experience it in your own bodies, and don't just listen to me do it, because you're not going to get as much if you're just listening to me. So I'm going to put the pen in my mouth, and I'm going to make some lower sort of vocally fry-y kinds of sounds. Okay? This is an appropriate time of year to be doing this. It's like Halloween season, and we're making weird Night of the Living Dead kinds of sounds. So go ahead and take a minute and try that yourself. I'm just going to give you a minute, and I'm going to drink my tea while you do it. Okay, did you have fun? Did you make some good Halloween sounds? I hope you made me proud. So I hope what you may have noticed, and we're going to do it again in a second so that you can notice it if you didn't notice it, hopefully, is that the sounds that we were making were basically happening in our bodies, in our throats, below the pencil. Okay, it was just like, there's a physical place that you can feel your vocal cords vibrating together in your throat, and that place is basically below the pencil, what you feel when you do those vocal fry sounds, okay? So let's do it again and see if you can feel that if you didn't before. And if you did, let's develop even greater awareness of that, okay? So here I go. Your turn. Okay, good. I hope it was fabulous. Now, we're going to make a different kind of sound. And again, we're going to use the pencil. And here's what this sound is going to sound like. Ah, ah, ah. Can you try that sound now with your pencil or finger? Can you feel a difference? The second sound is a healthier sound, and I think you can probably hear it. It's probably pretty obvious. And I hope that you could feel that that sound has a more lofted quality. It doesn't require necessarily more energy. It requires more, maybe more connection to what you're doing, but that sound is lofting very easily and naturally up and over that pencil and even up into your head. You might feel sensation in your head as you're making that sound, okay? So let's try it one more time. I'm going to do it, and then you repeat after me. Ah, ah, ah. Go ahead. So that is called the pencil exercise. It's a very scientific name, I know. I thought long and hard before I named it. But that exercise, what it really does is it helps you develop an awareness of your voice in your body and whether you're producing your voice in a healthy way or not. So when we're speaking, when I speak, I'm pretty practiced at lofting my voice over the pencil, at having my voice happen up in my head in a way that is healthier. It's working more with my body, and it's actually energizing. It really is. You'll notice that when you're low in energy, your voice might start really dropping back like this. That's really easy to happen, for it to start kind of sounding raspy when you're tired. But it's actually, if you can really kind of work with yourself to lock your voice at that point, it actually is energizing because you're helping the energy flow through your body in a healthy way and an unblocked way, in a flowing way, rather than having your hose kind of crimped and having this low energy blah, kind of sound coming out. So that's something to work with. The pencil exercise and working on eliminating vocal fry. Something to know about vocal fry is that it tends to happen at the ends of phrases. Did you hear me fall down at the end of that phrase? So sometimes people don't have vocal fry until they're done saying whatever they're saying. Can you hear the ends there? So that's the time to especially give a little extra sound energy to your voice at the end of phrases so that you don't drop it as much. Now, I do often drop back into a little bit of vocal fry at the ends of my phrases. I don't think within our society we can completely eliminate that because it will sound really stilted and weird at this point. If I always talk super lofted and super up above my pencil, then I would sound overproduced and stilted and awkward and pretentious. Pretentious would be a good word for how I would sound. Now I'm kind of making fun of it, but it would sound a little funny and overproduced. So I do let a little bit come in just so I sound like I belong in the society because it's important for us to belong, right? So I'm not saying completely eliminate it. I'm saying minimize it, okay? Now, number two would be we want to determine if you're speaking too high or too low for your natural vocal range. And this is a biggie. And what tends to happen with many people is that they speak, they're trying to sound rich or full or confident or impressive in some way, and they will speak too low for their natural range. And that is going to, one, lead to potential vocal fry all over the place, and number two, it's going to cause strain on your voice if you're speaking above or below where your voice is naturally most comfortable in the speaking range. So how the heck do you determine that? Well, we're going to do a little exercise here called the mm-hmm exercise. Again, very scientific. I thought long and hard about this before I named it. So the mm-hmm exercise is something that you're going to do to help you discover where your voice naturally is happiest when you're speaking. So what you're going to do is you're just going to pretend like you're responding to somebody and you're saying yes, but you're not verbalizing it. You're verbalizing it, but you're just saying mm-hmm instead of saying yes, okay? So you're just going to say mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just do that a few times until it feels comfortable. It feels like, okay, yeah, I'm in the pocket. I'm in the pocket. Mm-hmm, okay? Now, if you bring the pencil exercise to that, you'll notice that when you do it, you're actually lofting over the pencil if you're doing it right. So, mm-hmm. Now I said mm-hmm without my lips closed. I put the pencil in my mouth and said, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay? So then what I want to do is prolong that pitch and practice speaking right there. Okay? So, mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm, one, mm-hmm, two, mm-hmm, three. Do you hear how I'm doing that slowly? Because it's new, and I want to practice and take the time to feel my way through it if I'm doing it for the first time. So I really have to get clients to slow down so that they can start breaking the habitual pattern, if the habitual pattern has been to speak like this or to try to force their voice too low to speak in a husky way or something. That happens a lot with actors who are told to speak in certain ways for their quote-unquote character type. So we're going to just practice that again. So I'm going to say something and then you repeat after me, okay? So mm-hmm, one, mm-hmm, two, mm-hmm, three, mm-hmm, four, mm-hmm, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, So can you hear the absence of vocal fry? And I'm right in the pocket of the healthy place for my voice. And what you can do to try to help get yourself on that track more consistently is maybe talk to yourself while you're driving. And just always start with that, And if you feel like you've gotten away from your healthy vocal production, then just go back, bring that right back in, and then try it again. Again, this goes hand in hand with having that voice gently lofted rather than hanging out mostly in the throat, as happens with vocal fry. Okay? Now, for someone who's speaking too high for their natural range, again, this is probably going to help you, and you might have to readjust. Maybe you talk up here all the time, and you know, it's just too high and too shrill or something. I'm not very good at imitating shrill, but what you want to do is find a place where it's comfortable, where it feels like your voice is grounded, embodied. It's lofted in a healthy way. Too high, though, it's not creating a sense of overstimulation or bird syndrome, a little chirpy bird syndrome, okay? It's grounded, it's natural, it feels really good when you find the pocket place where your voice wants to be hanging out, okay? So the third way would be to determine if you're pushing your voice too hard or if you're creating too much if you're pushing your voice too hard or creating too much vocal strain or being too loud, or if, on the other hand, you're underspeaking or under-supporting your voice, which may have kind of a whispery tone, or maybe you have a really hard time speaking up and pushing your voice louder, so you're having a hard time being able to create enough volume. Now, usually people are on one or the other side of the spectrum, and they're pretty clear about where they are on that spectrum. With either of these conditions, but especially with speaking with too much strain, this can cause extensive vocal problems. I've had to rehab teachers who lose their voices every single day. They're hoarse by the end of the day. They start out able to speak, but then they lose their voice by the end of the day. Now, what happens over a period of years of this going on, their voices are going to get damaged. They just are. If you're speaking for an extended period of time and you're losing your voice every time, that is not healthy, and it's not necessary. You actually shouldn't have that kind of strain if you have to project or if you have to speak for extended periods of time. If you know how to do it well, your voice is going to be fine, okay? So these conditions are really going to be most easily dealt with, either under-supporting or over-supporting, if you take some vocal training so that you're learning how to overcome a lot of years of muscle memory. The first two that I mentioned, the vocal fry and the determining if you're speaking too high or too low, those are sometimes more easily addressed without specific one-on-one or class guidance with a professional. But this one, if you're pushing really hard, you're straining your voice, or you're habitually under supporting your voice, those might take a little bit more work with somebody who can help you start to identify what you're doing and the difference between what you're doing, which is unhealthy, and how to do it in a healthy way. So really the best advice that I can give here is to decide which of these fits you. Can you figure out if you're under speaking or if you're over speaking? And then what you're going to want to do is start learning about breath and what breath support, which isn't one of my favorite terms, but what that really means, and how to power your voice with the breath. Because our lungs are really the pumps that make everything work. If they're under-functioning or over-functioning, or this, if that's not in good, happy functioning with our lungs and our breath support, then that tends to be the underlying cause of both your under-speaking and your over-speaking. So I'm not going to be able to cover all of that today. I will definitely be going into, I will be doing an entire episode on breath because it's a big deal. And I have some really cool things to share with you that I think will help a lot of people. It's news I really want to spread. It's an alternative breathing technique that you probably have never heard of because it's not commonly taught in the United States. So I'm going to have to spend a whole episode on that alone. But what we want to be doing in the meantime to help get you introduced, if this is something that you really want to learn more about, right now I do have a breathing series of videos. It's 4 videos where I really talk about what is going on with breathing and breathing in different positions and with different body shapes and why breathing can be so confusing and helping to start unmasking and clarifying so that it's not so confusing. So if you're interested in that, you can go to YouTube and just look up Singing for Your Soul Breath Series, or you can go to my website and go to the home page and scroll down to the bottom of the home page. There are a number of videos there, and you can click through them, and the breath series are all there. They're all in that series that's on the home page. And so they're not in order. I just so you know, I put them out of order for some reason, but you can find them if you just click through the videos. And that will help you start getting some understanding of what breathing is, why it's so important, and how it's working for or against us with our voices. Now, the final thing that we're going to look at today is something that's so common, and it causes so many vocal problems, and it's not really a vocal technique thing as much as it is a physical health thing, and it's called acid reflux. I know there are so many people who have been diagnosed with this, and there are so many people who are actually on medication for it. And it is important that if you do have acid reflux, that you get it diagnosed and start working to alleviate it in your life. That is a really important thing, especially if you value the health of your voice and if you use it in any important way in your life, which most of us do. I mean, it's our main means of communication. We really want to be taking care of it. Now, it can be happening and people don't realize that they have it. I've had friends who are professional singers who suddenly their voice literally hemorrhages and they didn't know anything was wrong, and then suddenly they can't sing and they find out that they've had acid reflux. So this information goes for all of us. It's just about living healthier and taking better care of our bodies. So I know that there are a lot of people on medication for acid reflux, and I'm certainly not one to stand in as a doctor in this matter. I won't pretend to do that. But I can tell you my experience with acid reflux, and the biggest experience that I have with it is with my partner, Marvin, who is a singer and a musician, and he, for years, had really bad acid reflux, and it was really affecting his voice as a performer. And he's new to singing. He didn't start out as a singer. He started out as a percussionist and then learned piano and singing in his 20s. So he just tackled it like a champ in his a little bit later in life, not super late, but, you know, not in his teens or early years. But he was really having a lot of problems with acid reflux. And what he discovered is that if he ate kale every day, he didn't have as many problems. In fact, he didn't have any problems. He does not have acid reflux anymore as long as we're feeding him cabbage or kale or some really, really good leafy greens, Swiss chard, stuff like that. Really helps alkalize the system and cause that acid reflux to not bother him anymore. The only time it bothers him now is if he's been eating too many processed foods, which I really try to make sure doesn't happen, to try to make sure that we're eating all whole, healthy, as much organic as possible, and homemade foods with most of our servings, including vegetables at every meal. And when we do this, he doesn't have problems. If he starts to eat too much acidic foods like tomatoes, tomato sauce, sugar, is a big one that I try to keep him off of. I try to keep myself off of it too. Sugar, it really has a lot to do with changing your diet and eating a more alkaline diet. So you can actually look up, if you're not familiar with alkaline foods, look up alkaline foods and the difference between alkaline and acid and start trying to incorporate more alkaline-based foods into your life. juices, green juices, smoothies with fruits and veggies in them. Meat is acidic. Cheese and dairy are acidic forming foods in the body. So we want to be balancing things out with more fruits and vegetables, and even nuts, almonds, things like that tend to be more alkalizing. So we're looking at, again, whole health. Other things that you can do to help with eliminating or reducing acid reflux are to not eat too late. Don't eat too soon before bedtime. Some people have a lot of luck with raising the headboard side of the bed up, maybe putting it on some blocks so that it's a little bit higher, so that you're sleeping at a slight slant with your feet down below the level of your head, so that that acid isn't coming back up. And what it does when it comes back up is it burns the underside of the vocal cords. That's obviously not the happiest situation to be dealing with, because it's going to affect them sooner or later. So that's another way, is to raise your bed. Don't eat too late at night. Watch it with the wine late at night. I do drink wine from time to time. I'm not super regular with it. Every once in a while I'll get on a little bit of a kick because I feel sophisticated when I drink it, I guess. I don't know. I just love having wine sometimes. But what I've noticed is that I am eating overall a healthy enough diet that it doesn't cause me problems when I do have it from time to time. Same thing with chocolate. That's one of the things they'll often say that you need to eliminate or reduce in your diet. But again, all things in moderation, especially if the bulk of your foods are your healthy veggies and your fruits and nuts and seeds and grains. I don't do too much grain personally, but things that are better for our bodies that we all have been hearing a lot about and know about at this point. So I think that about does it for our show today. And I really want to thank you for joining me. I so appreciate that you decided to spend your time here. I really am delighted by that and honored. So please feel free, if you have any questions or ideas or comments, to email me at info@singingforyoursoul.com, I-N-F as in Frank, O, at singing, S-I-N-G-I-N-G, for your soul, foryoursoul.com. And I do my best to answer every email. So please go ahead and drop me a line. And thanks so much. I hope you have a beautiful month. Fall is definitely my favorite season, so I'm really soaking it up, and I'm happily making lots of whole foods with pumpkins and apples and cinnamon and cloves as highlighted ingredients, and I hope you're really having fun this season as well. So sending you many blessings. Thank you so much.